time for two more contributions. This guy's had his hand up for a while.
My name's Arthur Dent. It's been Arthur Dent for 5 years because I found the world pretty bizarre, because everyone on the left started voting for Greens instead of Reds, and end up voting for the ALP, and you know, the state of Australian politics has me bewildered. But my question is mainly to the engineers there, that as a Red, I totally agree with the sentiments about, I'm the only stylist in the room, I suspect, but actually Maoist, that obviously if you do want to do something about energy costs and climate and so on, you would put massive R&D into massive investment. Now, the solution from social conservatives like Clive Hamilton is a market-based one of cap and trade. Now, I agree with him that that's a lot more economically rational than the kind of idiot regulation that the Liberal Party has finally got converted to. I also think it's a lot more economically rational than the kind of regulation that others here would probably support. But if you actually want to do the job, you would have to have a five-year campaign, a massive deployment, the sort of effort that was done under Stalin, so that they got the atomic bomb to match the American bomb after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the sort of effort that was done by Mao in China to make sure that they had the atomic bomb when both the Americans and the Russians were threatening to obliterate China. You would put that into R&D. So I'd like to ask the engineers there, and I was very impressed by the presentation that actually talked about baseload power, why they aren't simply pushing for the sort of level of R&D and fundamental science deployed across all technologies. Molten salt may or may not be the answer to baseload power storage, but there's various proposals, and they're, frankly, if they were as close as you claim, there'd be capitalists all over you offering to fund you for as much as you like. They're not as close as you say, but with massive R&D, presumably, you could end up being cheaper than coal. When you're cheaper than coal, India and China will stop building a coal power station a day. There is no way they will until there is something cheaper than coal. The third world is going to industrialise. No amount of speeches from Greenies are going to persuade them to hold back on the enormous benefits of electricity just because we don't want them to. So why are you lining up with Greenies and social conservatives instead of simply coming out and saying we need massive R&D? The question is to the engineers. I wasn't asking you, I was asking the engineers.
The woman in the second row, please. Could you pass the microphone to the woman in the second row?
No, I'd just like to make another point. A political will ought to be the will of the people. But the people of Australia, and to a large extent the people of the world, are being misinformed. And they're being treated like mushrooms. They're being kept in the dark about all this. Now, for instance, a few months ago, there was an article in The Age, which was, I think, on about the fourth or fifth page, and was about this wide, right, across the page. And it said, scientists say that business as usual means that global warming of 6 degrees in this century is inevitable. But there was not a single word about what that would mean. So people read that, probably all over Melbourne, all over Australia, but they didn't really mean that it meant, they didn't realise it meant that it meant extinction of life on this planet, did they? So they're being misinformed. So how can we get this information out to the people? Most of the people here are educated. They know what it means. The majority of people outside, they don't know what it means, and they listen to all sorts of misinformation. It's an awful thing to have to realize that life on this planet is endangered. They don't want to look at it. So how can we get the message across?
Okay, we'll have response from the panel, and then that'll be our final statements.
Thanks. In terms of the R&D, you know, I was giving a 10-minute presentation or a 15-minute presentation. I think everyone here would support a lot of R&D. The point we make, we look at proven, reliable, commercially available technologies because we want to make the point that we don't have to wait for things that are coming up in the future. We've got everything we need now, and we should get an immediate start. That is not to say that we don't do R&D concurrently. I think we absolutely should, and I'm pretty sure no one on the panel would disagree with that. In terms of generally getting people motivated, I think, you know, in the Second World War, people took action and got on board with massive changes really fast. And in my mind, the difference there is you just had strong leadership saying, this is what needs to be done, this is what we're doing, and this is why. Okay, so now you lack that leadership and you've got this massive PR campaign. But I don't think we should be completely disempowered by the vested interest PR campaign, because we've got a couple of really good cards to play. And one of them is that there's a lot of us, and if we're really well organised and we get out there and really lobby and write letters and that sort of stuff, we can make a huge difference, because it has to be more, as David said, it's got to be more painful for the government to ignore us than it is for them to ignore the fossil fuel industry. And getting out there and going, visiting your local politician and writing letters is best done as a group activity. It can actually be kind of enjoyable. If you're a bit informed, that really helps. But we just have to use our weight of numbers to counteract what is, you know, what is in the end a very small minority of people who are having way too much influence.
The state government had a small revelation a couple of months ago. They'd spent several years, and a lot of time this year, through that really clever energy minister of theirs. Ron Cole's not going to be minister after the next state election, so there's one good piece of good news he can be retired off, because he's on the nose too much. That they talked about ground coal and exporting ground coal and coal gasification, coal this and coal that. Every day they were going up there talking about coal, and somebody said on his backbench, said, if all you do is talk about coal, it looks like you're pro-coal government. And the sort of penny dropped, and you notice now there's been less time talking about coal and more time talking about renewable energy. And a wonderful protest we had outside Hazel, I think, really helped get that message through. And so the Yarra Climate Action Group, which is here tonight, now have and Zero Emissions have a banner which I hold outside Dick Binn's office, who's in a vulnerable seat down in Smith Street, saying Labor in bed with the coal industry, which is absolutely true. And it's the one message they hate and detest, because it's true and it works. So there's some very simple things we can do each and every day, just all the time say, Labor's in bed with the coal industry. It's effective, it is the most effective message we have. It's true, it works. That's not the, of course, the only thing we have to do. There are many others, but we do have messages which are working, and both the climate groups are working on, and I don't think they should despair. We know there's a federal election and a state election. I'm not sort of a wait for the ballot box, but I mean, there are several seats in the state election, Richmond, Brunswick, Melbourne, which are on the knife edge, and it has put the fear in the Labor Party. And it's really important in the next year that some of our energy is devoted to making that fear of Labor's become real. Because when, despite some limitations in the Greens, and I am very somewhat jaundiced view about the performance of the state ones in Victoria, which I won't go into now, it is practically what will motivate Labor to change.
Look, I just make a very brief comment in response to the commentary from the woman down the front, which I thought was very germane, and that is that we really haven't started to understand the implications of climate change yet, for what it means for us as humans. You know, we have this very modern idea that's 300 years old, that we are rational creatures, that we look at the evidence, assess what's in our interest and act accordingly. And we're now realising that that's a conceit, that we are prone to ignore and dismiss or play down massive. I'm not talking about the denialists in the Liberal Party, I'm talking about ordinary people who are unwilling to face up to the reality of the facts And it's only when we learn how to penetrate those enormously powerful defence mechanisms that we'll really start to get the sorts of responses that, that we need.
One last
one. OK, thanks, everybody. I just want to make one last plug for the Solar Systems Campaign. One of the reasons we got the Solar Systems Campaign going is because, well, there's lots and lots of things we can do to protest about climate change. Solar Systems actually focuses it where we can be really effective. That is, we can say we actually want to create jobs, green jobs. We want to say renewable energy. We want to make a strong argument that renewable energy is an alternative. And I think that's one reason we've got a lot of support for this campaign, is because it makes the arguments very clear. 950 jobs, you know, could be available in Mildura if they build a solar plant. Ongoing jobs, you know, 50 jobs or whatever. It makes it very clear. And this campaign, it doesn't have to stop the Solar Systems campaign. In Britain, there's a campaign for 1 million jobs, the green jobs that the union movement's running. If we could actually mobilise unions to actually support a green jobs campaign, then there's more potential for getting ordinary people involved with people who know, talking to people who may not have all the answers, but educating all of us about what are the issues and what is the way to go. I was involved in the anti-Iranian movement, which actually put a stop to most Iranian mines in Australia, and that was achieved through the massive movement that people are talking about, but critically linked with the union movement. So I urge people to get involved with our campaign, and on the 14th of December, when the receivers make their decision about whether or not there's going to be a solar systems company still alive, we're going to be commenting on that. It's going to be our last meeting of the year, plus a social gathering at the Tsufu Bar at Melbourne University, 6:30 on Thursday, December the 17th, and that's on your leaflets. So I'm hoping that everybody gets involved with us. Meanwhile, please keep doing whatever you're doing, because all the campaigning that all of us are doing is actually having an effect. So thank you very much for coming along tonight, and good luck with everything, and see you on Walk Against Warming Day as well, leading up to Copenhagen. Before you go, I've been reminded that we're asking you to donate some money tonight to our campaign. It does actually cost a lot, even though we're getting some donations from various people. We need more donations so we can keep the campaign going. So please put something in the bucket as you leave. And stay around for a cup of tea or coffee, or maybe we'll go across to the pub and have a beer. Thanks very much, everybody, for coming.
How the battery goes?
87%.
Oh, that's good.
It's good.